Although the police carried out New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg's order to evict Occupy Wall Street activists and remove their tents and infrastructure from Zuccotti Park with brutal efficiency on November 15th, the park remains a hub of the movement. A recent visit to Zuccotti Park found that a large number of activists remained there, participating in rallies, organizing protests, and conducting daily General Assembly meetings. New York City's Occupy movement showed its strength just 2 days after Bloomberg's raid and on the second month anniversary of their founding, when organizers employed nonviolent civil disobedience in an attempt to close down the New York City Stock Exchange and massed tens of thousands of protesters on a march across the Brooklyn Bridge in what they called the Festival of Lights. Elsewhere around the country, local governments and police are continuing their attempt to suppress the Occupy movement by dismantling encampments and physically assaulting activists. A recent incident where video images captured police officers on the campus of the University of California at Davis attacking activists engaged in nonviolent civil disobedience with pepper spray at point-blank range has generated public outrage at police and renewed support for the movement. Your reporter traveled to New York's Zuccotti Park on November 19th and sat down with two members of the Occupy Wall Street media team, Mark Bray and Senya Berrigan, who talk about how the dismantling of the park has affected their organizing and some of the major issues confronting their fast-growing national movement.
So about 1 o'clock in the morning on that day, Mayor Bloomberg ordered the NYPD to clear out Zuccotti Park or Liberty Square. They blocked off about 2 or 3 blocks kind of radius, so no one can get in. There was a complete media blackout. No reporters were allowed in. In fact, several were arrested. A councilman was arrested as well and bruised on the head trying to get in to observe. And so in the process, a lot of our fellow occupiers were violently torn from that park. A lot of them were brutalized by the NYPD, and about thousands, I don't know how many, I think 5,000 books, more or less the number, thousands of books were destroyed, computers were destroyed in the process, and a lot of our fellow comrades were pepper sprayed. And so it was, you know, I think it was just a complete act of cowardice in the middle of the night, 1 o'clock in the morning. Young people who have families, who have mothers, who have fathers, who have sisters, who have brothers. These aren't just animals. These are real human beings who are out there for real issues.
I've heard some people say that the park was certainly critical to getting this movement off the ground, you know, in New York and nationally and even internationally. But having been there for almost 8 weeks, people are still there during the day, but you can't camp out and you don't have the infrastructure that you had before. How much of a difference is that going to make in terms of organizing outreach and having the public visibility, which made this so powerful?
Well, you're absolutely right that the park was instrumental in getting the movement off the ground to begin with. Obviously, we took the tactic of having a geographic location as the center of our movement and having an encampment from the examples of the Arab Spring and the Indignados in Spain and various movements in France and Greece and so forth. And so, you know, initially I was kind of skeptical of that. I thought it was maybe a shallow imitation of more serious struggles in other parts of the world. But it really has captured the imagination of a wide percentage of the American people. And, you know, the issues that we're struggling for, economic justice, democracy, education and healthcare, these are not new issues. Unfortunately, they've been issues for a long time. But the demonstration against it, the protest against it, has been given a renewed vitality through this tactic. And so, you know, it's interesting because when we had the park, a lot of the press said, well, why do you need a park to have a social movement? Can't you just do it without a park? And now that we've lost the park, the very same press is saying, well, how could you have a social movement without the park? You need the park. So in a strong sense, there's a tendency to try and be negative towards what we're doing, no matter what we do, and we have to put that aside. So, you know, certainly it was a setback. Certainly we would have liked to stay in the park, and it would be insincere to say that we weren't hurt by what happened. But nevertheless, it's important to clarify, and a lot of outsiders don't realize that much of the actual organizing, the organizing meetings, were happening away from the park, if only because there wasn't a lot of space with all the tents and everything. And we have donated office space, storage space, a donated kitchen. We have a large infrastructure and apparatus and network of communication that's outside of the park that wasn't touched by what happened. And so the challenge now, in my mind, is to take the momentum we've gained, because certainly we got much bigger, much faster than anyone could have expected. in a certain sense, we had a movement before an organization. And to use the success and the popularity we've gotten to try and expand throughout the boroughs and make the Occupy movement much bigger than Lower Manhattan.
I had a question for you about national coordination, and that is obviously with the news reports and the leaked information that the police and the government, the federal government, were in ways involved in suppressing this movement. How far along is the coordination between the various groups for some, you know, national actions as well as some things in the future maybe I'm not even thinking of, and maybe you aren't either? But
well, we have regular conference calls on different themes among different members of certain working groups. And I think the degree of repression we faced has accelerated our communication because it's forced us to. And so some of the earliest examples of that really bearing fruit were solidarity marches we had with Oakland, the fact that we donated, $20,000 and 100 tents to their occupation. And I know that a lot of people from the different occupations have come to New York, and when I used to sit in at our press table, I would meet people from North Carolina, from Chicago, from Vermont, from Montreal, Toronto, London, you know, that would come. And, you know, there was a certain sense that we were sort of a hub for this because we kind of got it going in the United States. And so we've been enhancing our communication and our coordination. And I think you'll see as time goes along more days of national action even than we've had in the past. There's already talk potentially of having a national gathering in D.C. in the spring among all the occupiers coming down there. And so it's important, and the technology's made it easier. And I think the nice thing about it is that although people have sort of looked to New York as the start of it, we're trying more and more to shed that title and encourage initiative elsewhere and try to follow along.
That was Occupy Wall Street media team members Mark Bray and Senya Berrigan. For more news, analysis, and commentary on the Occupy Wall Street movement, visit our Between the Lines special Occupy Wall Street coverage and resource page at btlonline.org.